Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Welcome to DSC's Campfires with Larry Wysoon, the unique blend of hunting, fishing, wildlife conservation, and the outdoor lifestyle. DSC's Campfires is brought to you by DSC, Conservation, Education, and Hunter Advocacy. Hornady, accurate, deadly, dependable. Trigicon, brilliant aiming solutions. Taurus, award-winning pistols and revolvers. Mossberg, American built, American strong. And the Red 55 Winery in Lindale, Texas. Signature wines of Grammy award-winning country artist Miranda Lambert and owned by Rick and Beverly Lambert.
Welcome to another campfire session with, we've got some special guests today. Matt Gamble and I go back a little way. Matt is now very much involved with the Choctaw Nation and wildlife, but Matt and I used to be pen pals a long time ago.
We did. Well, that was really watching Real Tree Monster Bucks videos and seeing you on there. That's when I figured out, man, you can be a wildlife biologist.
Get paid. If that old guy can do that, anybody can do it, right?
That's right.
Well, it's truly an honor here to be with you guys. The Choctaw Nation owns property scattered pretty much in a certain area of Oklahoma. And you guys, Matt, you're now involved with the wildlife conservation, kind of hitting that program as well. And you've got some guests here with you as well, too. You happen to also be, I assume, people that you work with.
That's correct.
I hear this young lady over here snickering a little bit, so I assume that's probably the case.
Yeah, if she claims me. So, I'll introduce, this is Jordan Grotz. She's our wildlife biologist for the Choctaw Nation. She's doing a lot of bat surveys right now. We've got a big bat project through the Bureau of Indian Affairs Endangered Species Program. We have Luke Taylor. He's our senior wildlife biologist for the Choctaw Nation. He's our newest team member. He started 3 weeks ago now?
Maybe. Yeah.
So he's
pretty new.
He's pretty new. Mm-hmm. And then we have Devin Lindley. He's our conservation, education, and outreach coordinator. He's doing a lot of different work on outreach and educating tribal youth. And he was really instrumental in getting our hunter safety program developed this year. That's an internationally accredited hunter safety program through the NRA, but it's a Choctaw Nation hunter safety program, so we're really proud of that. And got a lot of really cool things going on here in the Choctaw Nation.
Y'all are kind of special as far as I'm concerned. I love the area where the Choctaw Nation lies because it's some of the most beautiful habitat that I can relate to in terms of for all kinds of different wildlife. I mean, you've got a great variety here, including even some introduced species, again, like buffalo, and you got elk coming in, you got black bear coming in, of course, you got white-tailed deer and turkeys, and I can't even imagine the myriad of non-game species that are here. does all this play into the management program that you guys are involved in as well, too?
Yes, yes. So our department within the Choctaw Nation is relatively new.
Yes.
It started in 2022. The governor of Oklahoma did away with the hunting and fishing license compact. So in order to protect the sovereign right of tribal citizens to hunt and fish within the nation, our department was created. Really the first year we worked a lot making sure that our tribal codes were up to date, that seasons and bag limits were something that tribal members were used to, that they were pretty congruent with the state regulations that had been in place, right, that they had been following. But as we grow and as we evolve, we're going to really start branching out into some of those non-game species. That's Jordan's work with bats, with the Endangered Species Project. That's one of the first things that we've taken on that's really heavy in the non-game side.
Now, what subspecies or species of bats are you dealing with here?
There's about 15 that cover the whole southeast corner of the state, so the entire Choctaw Nation has about 15 bats, 15 different species of bats. So there's about three of those that are going to be your endangered species or your threatened species. So we're kind of targeting that with our grant opportunity that we received. So it's really providing more habitat that has been altered around southeast Oklahoma for the bats.
What is good bat habitat for this part of the country?
So there's some bat species that live in caves and they'll leave here and they'll go hang out in the caves in northeast Oklahoma or Indiana. And there's some that stay here all year and they'll just hide under tree bark. Some of them just hang on tree branches and they kind of look like leaves and you wouldn't know that they're there. And then if it's really cold, some of them will be on the ground in the leaf litter. So it's kind of, it covers a whole like wide array of habitat types that it's possible to find them in. So it's a lot.
I didn't know all that.
Yeah,
I knew a little of that, but I wasn't aware that they even got into the leaf litter. That is, it makes good sense as far as, you know, staying warm kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So they're pretty adapted to humans, and they'll be in buildings too. That's
right.
That's a big factor that they come into contact with people.
What's the size range of the bats that you have here? I mean, in terms of maybe inches or weight or whatever. I know that none of them weigh a whole lot of.
I wish I could remember their specific weights. The smallest bat that we'll have around here is the southeastern Myotis, and they are they're pretty small. All the Myotis species are relatively small. And then our biggest would probably be our evening bat or big brown bat. And so they probably like the max would be like 11, 12 inches, I want to say, like wingspan.
Right.
From tip to tip.
Well, that's a pretty good sized bat then if it's 12 inches in wingspan.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things that they eat? I know it with probably varies by the species or subspecies.
Mm-hmm. Well, around here, they only eat insects here. So it's a lot of your crop pests, a lot of June bugs, cucumber beetles, a lot of mosquitoes. So
hooray, we need more.
Yeah. So the more bats, the less mosquitoes, the less pesticides we can use, you know, and it really, they provide such a good benefit to the agriculture industry. So that's another reason why we're pushing for more bats and providing bat houses in places where they've been disturbed or removed from the landscape.
That's very interesting. I've dealt with bats in different places in Texas. Of course, we got some huge, the free-tail bat primarily down there. And I mean, there's some of those caves there that there'll be 20, 30,000 of those come out in an evening. And they range for miles. They'll even go into the northern part of Mexico from their Rainy Valley, which is, you know, 50 to 75 to 100 miles in an evening and return. which is just absolutely amazing to me.
That's, yeah, that's a lot of calories.
That's a lot of calories. Obviously, whatever they're eating is rather
energy rich. Yeah.
It would have to be, because otherwise it'd be a detriment the other way around.
Exactly.
Especially when they're rearing their young, like yes. The moms have to, it's like a third of their body weight whenever they do give birth. They're losing that, and so they have to continuously feed and regain their strength back right. In order to go back to wherever they spend the winter.
That's very, very interesting. And I love the fact that they eat mosquitoes. With all the rainfall that we've had farther south here this year, there's water standing everywhere, and the mosquitoes, once it kind of warms up now a little bit, are going to be... I'm going to be begging for bats.
Coming out with a vengeance. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the hunter safety thing and getting more and more kids involved. Now, we're talking primarily here in this instance about children that are involved with the Choctaw Nation, right?
Right. Yeah, so our Hunter Edge course is through, like you said, the NRA and Native American Fish and Wildlife. They're the ones that made it possible. So it's ours is targeted for Choctaw tribe members. Anywhere from 10 up, and then they can go on, and when they get it, they'll be able to use it not only in Oklahoma, but they'll be able to use it in all 50 states, and then also I think there's 18 countries around the world that they'll be able to use it, so it's worldwide.
That's really cool.
Yeah,
that's something we're really proud of, because you know, before we came up with this program,
right,
they would have to be certified through Oklahoma Department of Wildlife or another state agency, but you know, this gives tribal members a chance to go through a program that, you know, emphasizes hunter safety, but also has the tribal component.
Yeah, that's really cool. And in the process, not only are you doing hunter safety, you're also doing some wildlife conservation type messages and all of that as well, too.
Right.
And so is it primarily for youngsters, or obviously adults can be, I mean, like...
Yeah, I mean, it's geared for, we're targeting more of the youth, but I mean,
right. Anybody
can take it, any age, so, and when you get it, I mean, like you said, it'll have the tribal component to it, and then when you print it out, it'll actually, the card will actually have the Choctaw seal on it, so whenever you show it, they can be proud to be Choctaw.
That is really cool. Now, Luke, you just coming on board, so what's your position going to be in terms of what all are you going to be involved in?
Well, I'm just now, like I said, brand new, so I'm learning the ropes, and I'm learning. I mean, I'm meeting tons of new people, trying to remember everybody's name, and so I'm excited to what I can give to this nation, and we'll see where it takes me. I don't know.
To me, the interesting thing, as I mentioned a while ago, the habitat here is phenomenal. There's hardwood, pines, there's a great variety of underbrush species, a lot of different browse species, weed species, all these kind of things that are conducive to wildlife as a whole. Let's talk a little bit about the deer program. I know here on the Choctaw, I've had the opportunity to hunt deer in the past, and to me, this area is one of the finest areas I've ever hunted in, again, because of the habitat, but also, I mean, the natural genetics that you have here for antlers is pretty darn impressive. And in so saying, I happened to get a few emails, I guess, or maybe it was text from this Matt Gammon showing pictures of him and his sons that were taken so unbelievable. Let's talk a little bit about that, Matt, and then we can get into the deer here on the Choctaw land.
You know, growing up, I grew up in Kiowa, which is just down the road here from Ty Valley, from the Choctaw Lodge. And my grandparents had a ranch growing up, and we had a big deer camp. There would probably be 30 to 40 people that would come to my grandparents' land for deer camp. My grandpa didn't really deer hunt. My dad hunted just because me and my brother like to go to the deer camp, so you know, we would go out, but there were a lot of deer in Atoka, Pittsburgh County, but not like there is now. And you know, deer really, or southeastern Oklahoma has always been kind of a destination spot for everyone throughout Oklahoma, because when the western part of the state didn't have deer, southeast Oklahoma did, just because of its remoteness. You know, the population density is, especially then, was low. And then, you know, it's just rugged. It's timbered. It's not easy to hunt. So there were always deer here. And I think that's really been a good foundation as deer numbers have come back. You know, they came back quicker here than other areas. But like you said, it's what makes Choctaw Nation unique is the diversity of habitats. You know, on our western edge, we still have remnant tall grass prairie, cross timbers, you know, that's that oak savanna mixed. And then as you move east, you transition into the more, you know, evergreen forest with pine and mixed hardwoods and a lot more topography, you know, the hills and the mountains. We're also blessed with a lot of water, you know, we have a lot of big rivers.
Yes, you do.
We have a lot of reservoirs.
Right.
So, you know, we're really blessed with a lot of really good deer habitat.
Right.
And the genetics, I mean, probably I would put it up against anywhere. I mean, you know, here at the lodge, we've started helping Dusty with the deer management and giving recommendations and trying to improve their deer herd here. You know, this year, I think one of the bigger deer that was killed on the fair chase side was 187 inches, which, you know, anywhere, that's a good deer.
Any and everywhere, that's a really good deer.
And, you know, trying to get the age structure up on the bucks, you know, taking some pressure off some of those younger bucks. That's, you know, that's what we're trying to help them do. Target which of those bucks are look like they need protected, and then, you know, helping balance doe to buck numbers. You know, there's that's been kind of a problem in southeast Oklahoma. Is there's always a lot more does than bucks, and as you know that kind of prolongs your rut. It doesn't condense very well. People wonder why they're seeing deer chasing in middle October all the way through February. Well, it's because you're way too many does. But hunters have really, you know, the Oklahoma Department of Wildlife has done a really good job of getting the word out to, you know, to increase antlerless harvest. And I think in the past decade or so, that's really started to take hold. You're starting to see a lot more people go out and shoot does. And, you know, for Choctaw Nation, it's not just about shooting a big buck or shooting a trophy. It's a way of providing sustenance. You know, there's a lot of tribal members that rely on white-tailed deer as their primary source of protein, not just tribal members, but people all over southeast Oklahoma. And as you start seeing kind of this organic trend of meat, you know, people wanting to know where their meat comes from, and it's everybody starting to kind of turn more to game. You know, they view that as organic, and man, I know it was raised right here, and no injections, no hormones, nothing bad for me. So it's really important that we keep a really good deer herd for everyone, including our tribal citizens.
Absolutely. And as you increase the nutrition is what y'all are doing with some of the things here, and with the burning process, to me, that's going to create a whole lot of really good nutritious browse. I got a feeling that every doe that you've got out here will probably have twins this spring. And well, to me, that increases the number that you need to take off each year as well, too.
Excuse me.
Certainly.
Funny that you say that. So all of the does that we harvested in December and January, we actually we did a necropsy,
right.
Looked at all the fetuses. Every doe that we harvested had twins. So...
Did you pay attention to whether it was buck or doe fawn? I mean, did you get the comparison of the...
So, a lot of them, when we measured them, were really
yeah,
small.
You're talking, yeah.
Toward the end, we did. There were... Seems like it was skewed more towards bucks.
Yeah.
But what an interesting thing that we found was that generally in this area, I would say peak rut timing is somewhere in that November 10 range. That's when you're really going to see. I always tell people when they ask me, you know, I've got a week of vacation for deer season. When do I need to take it? And I tell them, if you're an archery hunter, the week of the 10th,
yes.
Somewhere around that, you need to be out there. And this year we saw a lot of, in my hunting myself,
right.
And people that I hunt with, seemed like bucks were moving a lot earlier. We were seeing a lot of chasing earlier. And all of the does that we measured the fetuses on, their conception dates were from October 25th to November 7th. So it seems like they were a little bit early. Now, our sample size wasn't really big enough to make a big conclusion that that was like that everywhere. But, you know, we had a tremendous mass crop. I mean, there were acorns everywhere. Yes. There were persimmons everywhere. Deer weren't coming to feeders like they normally would just because they could take five steps and there's more acorns everywhere. All of the does that we looked at this fall and all the bucks were tremendous fat reserves. I mean, they were it almost looked like a fattened hog. I mean,
like you could make bacon out of the brisket and all that kind of thing.
And, you know, last year we did the same thing. We saw some does that weren't bred. We saw some does that had singles. There were a few that had twins, but it was much more varied. Last year, most of the bucks on the lodge had started shedding their antlers December 20th, and most were finished in the first week of January. We're still seeing a lot of bucks with horns still.
So they're in really good body condition.
Yeah, so the body, I mean, and it just goes to show you know, people, when you can look from year to year and actually take that data down, because my memory's not good enough. Sometimes I don't remember, was that 2 or 3 years ago? So when we're able to take that data and look at that from year to year, we can see that, wow, man, the rain and acorns really make a difference.
It really does. We did much research through Mormon Mineral and also ADM through the Texas A&M University at Kingsville a few years ago. We were trying to develop a ration with them, and through all kinds of research that we did, we found that energy was every bit as important as what is protein. You know, so very often you hear people say, well, you got to keep them on a high protein level. They're not getting the energy level, a high energy level. They just don't do as well as what they would otherwise. Here, you're very fortunate and blessed that you do have some spring fruits. You have some spring things that come along in the springtime and even in the summertime that produce energy. And of course, you're dealing with that long reserve of acorns like we were talking about earlier. We're here almost at the beginning of March, and there's still acorns under the tree, and they're still good. You know, so you think about that, and that's going to carry those deer a long way. And they're such great shape right now anyway.
Well, and that's something we usually don't see. Usually, even on a good acorn-producing year, usually you get enough rain, you know, they're going to be rotten by the end of November, 1st of December, somewhere in that range, or the majority of them will.
Right.
And like you say, it's March, and we still have a ton of acorns that are still good.
And you mentioned persimmon. I was here during the time when the persimmons were starting to turn color and ripen, and it didn't, same thing with any acorn-bearing tree. If it was 8 inches tall, it seemed like it had acorns on. And if it was persimmons, it was almost the same thing. And just the tremendous amount of mass, the soft mass there was just astounding when you get right down to it.
Yeah, and it's, especially early, there's not a lot that will pull a deer away from persimmons if they have access to them.
Well, here they didn't have to go very far because I walked a lot of country, and Dusty and I got out and looked. I mean, it was just the most amazing persimmon crop I'd ever seen anywhere.
Almost to their detriment. I saw some trees that had broke.
Not just figuratively, literally the limbs were broken down because of the weight of the dead gum fruit on it.
Yeah.
It's amazing. What are some of the other wildlife projects? We've talked a little bit about deer. I know you've got turkey and you've got bear and you've got a tremendous squirrel population here. And they're, I assume, in a pretty decent waterfowl population here at times as well, too. So you've got a lot of diversity and all that. But let's, one of the things that in research and all the stuff that I did years ago as a wildlife biologist, I found that whenever I tried to improve the habitat for whether it be turkeys or quail or doves or waterfowl or deer or antelope, elk, whenever we did that, the habitat benefited in terms of diversity, and the result of that, we had greater diversity in terms of animals that were there, and I include the insects and all that. Same thing, I'm sure, is probably happening here.
It is. I mean, not only are we diverse in habitat, we're diverse in animal. I mean, there's, I couldn't tell you right off the top of my head, but I know there's well over 100 different fish species that are native.
Yeah, we hadn't even talked about the fish. Oh my gosh, yes.
And you know, we have American alligator. There aren't many places that have white-tailed deer, American alligator,
bears.
You know, so we have a lot of different things going on, and you know, for us, it's more of an overall, like you said, more of the overall habitat. You know, when it comes to monitoring and surveying, you know, we're species specific, but from a management standpoint, if you have good habitat, you're going to have what should be there, you know. And, you know, right now turkeys, are a pretty big concern, with not only within Choctaw Nation, but I think nationwide. You know, turkeys have kind of taken a...
Looks like their population trend is downward right now. And that includes in Texas, where we used to count turkey roost in Coleman County, which is kind of the north, central northwestern part of the county, and on the Colorado River there, and we would count in excess of 20,000 or more birds along a length of where you take a ball and say, okay, you watch here to here, you know, skip over the way, and you watch them. We'd count as many as 20,000 turkeys coming in to roost there in an evening. And I think now, from the last time I talked to the guys out there, it was down to like 1,500 or 2,000.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a big question, like, what in the world's happening? It can't just be predation. It can't just be one thing. There's got to be a bunch of factors that are working there.
Yeah, especially just to see it. The decline is just so widespread.
Right.
You know, it's not the piney woods.
No.
Or just the prairies. It's everything. I know Oklahoma State University have some projects going on right now within the Choctaw Nation, looking at maybe, you know, some of the causes for that, looking at nesting behavior, poult survival. They're doing that with a couple of grad students. We have really the strongest population of black bears in the state. We estimate, you know, between 2,000 and 3,000 black bears within the 10.5 counties.
It's a lot of bear.
It's a lot of bears, and there's some big bears.
Oh yes.
And it's growing. You know, the population continues to expand. It continues to kind of push itself westward. Oklahoma State University has also done a lot of monitoring of the black bear population. We work really closely with the Oklahoma Department of Wildlife on harvest statistics and making sure that we're being good stewards of that resource, because it's another resource that's very important for tribal members. So we want to make sure.
Truly.
Yeah.
I know there's a few elk scattered around there. Are you starting to see more and more elk move into your area here? And what are your feelings about that?
So for the most part, we have seen a few wild elk
right
near the lodge or on the lodge property. I would say, you know, the Oklahoma Department of Wildlife stocked elk in Pushmataha County several times in the early 2000s, 90s, mm-hmm. in that. And they've never really just taken hold real well. I've talked to some of the biologists that were part of that project and at Pushmataha WMA, and brainworms is one of the things that they say is, you know, it's so wet here,
mm-hmm.
and
yes.
They see a lot of brainworms. Poaching is an issue.
Right.
A lot of landowners view elk as competing more with their livestock, grazing more, so they don't really want them. Like, they don't tolerate them as well as they do
exactly.
deer. But, you know, I mean, I think there's opportunities for, you know, before we did any kind of widespread stocking or reintroductions, you know, I think it needs to be looked at as why it hasn't taken. I mean, there's been enough elk put on the landscape that I think if they were going to do well, they should have done well by now. So I think it needs to be looked at as what's the limiting factor, what's going on to keep them from really, really establishing.
one of the things that I've dealt with places in Colorado and in mountains where we had huge, great mule deer populations. And when that elk population started moving in, our mule deer population started going downhill in terms of numbers and particularly in terms of quality. And I dealt with several ranches in Texas where under a high fence we had elk and whitetail. And when we had any appreciable number of elk, we didn't have really good whitetail in there. They were just very, very competitive in so many different ways for water, for space, and for food.
They're a big animal.
They're a big animal, and they do well in certain areas. And maybe, in my opinion, that's where they ought to be.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I mean, elk,
that's
were,
me.
Elk were here. I mean, yeah. You know, historically, elk were here, but the subspecies of elk that were here are no longer, they're extinct. So, you know, the elk that they've stocked in here, the Rocky Mountain subspecies, they're probably not the best adapted for this
exactly
area.
Exactly. So, well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I know that there's elk scattered around, and, you know, sometimes landowner ideas change a little bit, too. It's kind of like what we were talking about earlier when we were talking about whitetail deer harvest. I remember when we didn't harvest any does in Texas, when we first started harvesting does in South Texas, down in that brush country area, for the first 3 years, I think we killed between 2 and 5 does. We should have been killing 1,000, you know. And now we kill considerably more does than we do bucks each year. Mm-hmm. But it took almost a change of generational landowners to accept that. Because what do you mean? I'm like, you know, I'm in the cattle business. I don't go out there and shoot my cows.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Kind of thing. Well, yeah, it's a little different kind of thing. But it changed a lot over a period of time. And sometimes it does. It's just a matter of time of people seeing and maybe getting one or two people involved in a program, and then they start seeing results. And to me, that works really well, too, when you're talking about different types of habitat, where you're talking about habitat improvement.
Oh, yeah.
I know that y'all have just now, again, started burning here. And in some instances, it may be the first time this country has burned by man in a long time. You know, it may have caught fire from lightning storm or something like that. But that can be a really important management tool in some of this part of the country, can it not?
I think fire in this part of the country is the most important management tool. Yeah. You know, this is pretty rough country, so, you know, mechanical manipulation can be difficult. You're going to tear up a lot of plows. You're going to tear up a lot of discs. You're going to tear up a lot of equipment if you try to do mechanical manipulation in some of this, because it's so rocky and so rough. And it's expensive. It's time consuming, whereas, you know, our forestry crew that works out here to do these burns, you know, they can cover a few thousand acres in one day, whereas, you know, a mechanical treatment, you may cover an acre a day, maybe.
If you're fortunate.
And it's going to probably cost you as much as that acre costs. So
exactly.
Our forestry crew, they're really, really good at what they do. And I think as we move forward, you know, our leadership chief, assistant chief, our tribal council, they have supported our department a lot, but they also support making sure that the resources that we can control are in the best possible shape they can be. So they really, you know, we really get a lot of support to make sure that we're doing what's needed to be done.
And you got a pretty good leader up there in Jody Sander for pushing for the right things as well, too. I've had the pleasure to spend time with Jody and vision with him quite a bit in years past, and he's got a very open mind about different things, thank goodness that's the case, because I think sometimes that's really important when it comes to having that open mind and trying something. You know, if it doesn't work, well, we're not going to do that again, or we'll find another time to do it. But sometimes you got to try different things to see how they do work.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, you know, we're in the environmental department, and, you know, everybody, my boss, Ty Baker, he's the senior director of environmental, and, you know, the environmental department takes care of assessments of property and doing all the federal compliance when, you know, if we're going to go in and do a burn to check to make sure that NEPA is covered, that the forestry department has their own archaeologists that make sure all of that stuff is followed. we do, or our department does compliance to make sure that, you know, all of the environmental regulations are being met, and, you know, everybody works together, and that makes it a lot easier when everybody's on the same page, whether,
yes, sir,
whether you're in forestry, whether you're in wildlife or environment, you know, and, you know, with Jody and Dusty, with them being in commerce, you know, everybody comes together. There aren't, right, there aren't a whole lot of opportunities for commerce and government to work together like we do here. I mean, there are some, but, you know, here, you know, from a wildlife perspective, you know, we want Ty Valley and the Daisy Ranch and all Choctaw Nation properties to be showcases, to be, yes, like, hey, this is where the land is managed correctly. They're doing responsible environmental projects. You know, we have in our environmental compliance, you know, they have some grant money to help with pollinator habitat, which is very important with monarch butterflies and all the things that go along with that, that are, and, you know, people look at pollinator habitat as weeds, but that's really good deer forage, you know, when, and if we could use that, if we could tell people, hey, deer love it and it's good for them and they'll plant it, that's, hey, we, you know, we don't have to mention that it's really good for everything else too. No. As long as they think it's good for deer, we'll get them going on it. So
you're exactly right. I remember that from years ago. I mean, I've always enjoyed watching butterflies. But to me, it's the whole thing. It's the plants. It's the things you can't see and the things that you can see that are there. And if you, a lot of times you keep those things that you can't see very often happy, then all the rest of it kind of comes along as well a little bit too. Kind
That's
of
right.
So anything that you see coming down that you guys are really excited about right now, maybe in the next 2 or 3 years? I know you're looking more and more, you're smiling over, oh my gosh, yes. But yeah.
I mean, I'd love to do more bat work, more, yes, surveys and helping out threatened and endangered populations. I think we can make a lot of difference there. So I'm excited for how we expand that program.
It's going to be interesting.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited about a lot of our youth initiatives.
Yes.
You mentioned my two boys earlier. I have a 7-year-old and a 10-year-old, Reed and Merritt. They go with me just about every time I go. And we, between the three of us, we harvested 11 deer this year. So, and they
love
it.
You're not going to go hungry this year.
No.
Next fall. Well, I'll take it back. Wait a minute. I remember about what everybody at that stage where they can eat about a third of a deer at a sitting.
Yeah. They love deer jerky. Deer jerky and summer sausage. But that's one of my passions, is really sharing the hunting heritage. You know, hunting was such a big part of Native American culture, history, and making sure that our tribal youth are exposed to that. And with some of the programs that we've got coming up with that Devin, with fishing programs, fishing clinics, archery programs, our culturals, they do a really good job of putting on clinics to teach traditional ways of tanning hides and traditional bow making, different things like that. So we're going to work with them and really target ways to get kids out here doing this. And I think there's one of the things that I'm really proud of with our deer statistics is that 48% of the harvest that was checked in through the Choctaw Nation for whitetail deer was hunters that were 35 and younger, which goes way against the national trends of it being older generations that hunt. So I think there's a need there. I think the kids want to do it. I think they, you know, we just want to make sure that they have somebody to teach them and that they have places to go. I'm a big advocate of public land, making sure that people have outdoor spaces that they can go. The reservation has a lot. We have the Ouachita National Forest. There's a lot of U.S. Army Corps of Engineer lands around the reservoirs. There's BLM land. There's Bureau of Reclamation land. And then, you know, in the future, we would like to target some of the areas that the Choctaw Nation owns that we may able to provide some opportunities.
Do some youth hunts.
Youth hunts, exactly, or yeah, like a draw hunt type situation. And our leadership is extremely supportive of that. Chief and assistant chief and tribal council, you know, they really value the youth and making sure that they are connected to the land.
The fishing side of it too, I mean, mm-hmm, we've kind of just barely touched on that, but to me, the beauty of that is my gosh, you can do it year round. You know, yeah, you can get kids involved year round as opposed to just during the hunting seasons. And I know you got a lot of squirrels out here too.
Oh.
So to me, squirrel hunting, don't overlook that, because to me, that's one of the greatest and the bestest, and I mean it that way, training grounds to become a good hunter. Because it takes patience, it takes accuracy, it takes learning about, you know, all kinds of different things. And I'm convinced if somebody learns how to be a good squirrel hunter, they're capable of hunting anything there is in the world with great authority kind of thing. So between the fishing, the squirrels, and all the other things, Devin, you got a full plate.
Yeah. And like he was saying, a lot of our numbers are a lot of youth involved. We also have a high number of women that hunt and harvest deer, which goes against a lot of the nationwide stuff.
I love that because, to me, in a utopian world, it would be 50% of the licenses went to men, 50% went to women. And it wouldn't bother me if 60% of them went to women and 40% went to men, kind of thing. It's particularly in the world that we live in these days. It's to me, it's so very important if that mom can get out with those kids. And with, again, going back to some of the local war movement type of thing, I mean, a lot of people are now looking at wildlife as they should, as a really good food source. Mm-hmm. And that includes the fish, the birds, and all the other things.
Yeah, I know, I love it.
Obviously, I think all four of you guys love it. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here right now. If somebody wants to learn a little bit more about what you guys are involved in, Matt, and since you're kind of the honcho here on all this, what's the best way? Or if somebody wants to learn more even about, you know, what could we do to whatever, maybe even contribute money to a fund that would allow for building of more bat houses, you know, or that kind of thing.
I'll let Devin kind of talk about some of the ways you have to reach us on Facebook, social media.
Yeah, if you don't mind.
So on Facebook, we're under Choctaw Nation Environmental Protection Services. We'll post, you see the wildlife post and you get to see the environmental side. So that's how we share all of our events, like our bear classes that we did last year. We've got some stuff coming up for fur bears in the next couple weeks. And then also, like, the environmental folks do stuff for pollinators, and they've got a couple of beekeeping classes they're promoting right now. So that's the social media side of it. If to see our other stuff, if you go to choctawnation.com and then go under services and find wildlife, we have a whole page there, and it has all of our Title 110 our code. It's got how to check in an animal if you're a tribe member, and then that's where we post a lot of our videos, like bear permitting and things like that. So, and we're regularly updating those. So
cool stuff.
Yep.
It's an exciting time for sure.
It is an exciting time. And again, y'all have got some of the finest habitat that I've ever been in. I absolutely love coming up here, and I come up here and I kind of get lost while I'm here. I mean, in my mind, I get lost, not necessarily lost out in the woods, but just to look at this country, absolutely beautiful it is. I want to thank each one. Luke, welcome to the group. By golly, we'll come back and find that next year. We'll come back and say a few things, find out what you did last year. It's Jordan, all the very best. Thank you for what you're doing. So very often, some of the animals like the bats and some of the others are kind of overlooked, but thank you for doing that. Devin, thank you for what y'all are doing through the youth. And Matt, my gosh, always good to see you, and thank you for what you're putting together and continue to do. And I know you guys are heading off to a conference, I think, right after this is over with. So I truly appreciate y'all spending time with us around the campfire this morning. And we'll be back next time I come back. As long as these guys let me come back, I'm coming back again and again and again. And we'll try to figure out where we are at different stages and maybe some of the new things that you guys have added. So thank y'all very much. Ladies and gentlemen, join us right back here next week at the same time, kind of the same bat station. And we'll see where we go from there.
DSC's Campfires has also been brought to you by the Crown Bar in LaGrange, Texas. Habit, our gear, your adventure. The Texas Wildlife Association, Double Nickel Taxidermy, Burnham Brothers Game Calls, and H3 Whitetail Solutions.
You want to succeed, you want to fish, you want to be one of the greatest.
Tune in to West Marine's Life on the Water, presented by Costa Custom Boats, every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
You'd think, with four of us spread out on a tiny island, that the task of tagging a whitetail would not be a big thing. But, as I've learned, no matter where I've been, whitetails can be damn tricky.
Pursuing wild game in wild places. Tune in to Hunt Stand Presents Saturdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.